Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
Hey guys, Mike here. Before we get to this week's interview with Alex Vukic, just wanted to say, if you are interested on the back end of the Alex Vukic interview, I'll also just include my interview after the match with Stefan Kozlov, who did beat Alex in the Challenger final in Charlottesville, but we'll have that on the back end of this interview. So here is the podcast to myself, Noah Rubin, and proud University of Illinois graduate, Alex Vukic.
All right, we are joined, and this is actually a repeat guest. If you count to the Coffee Cast back when this podcast was at its peak, when it was at its best, Alex Vukic is joining us here on the Behind the Racket podcast. We are in Charlottesville. Just so you guys at home, as you're listening, this will be posted after Charlottesville, immediately after Charlottesville. So you are still in the tournament. Anything could happen over the next few days. We've already been very close to seeing a fight on court during the week. So, I mean, anything could happen. But congrats on reaching the quarterfinals. It has been obviously a very long and difficult year for all of the Australians being away from home for 8, 9, 10 months. You do have a home base here, obviously in Champaign as well. But what has it been like in terms of just not really feeling capable of going home?
Oh, brutal. Brutal. I think for all the Aussies, it's been so tough. But like you said, I got so lucky that in Champaign, I do have a base there. So I was in Europe probably from March till August, which is a long time. And I definitely struggled there, was burnt out, was basically going from one tournament to another, even if I was injured, just for like a bit of hospitality and just so I could train with some guys because I had no base. So it was not good mentally. At least there were a few Aussies around. So, you know, you could kind of share, you were all going through the same stuff. But yeah, it's been brutal. I got COVID as soon as I came to the US before the US Open. That was kind of a blessing, honestly, because I went back to Champaign, regrouped mentally, and then was kind of ready, and I'm in a good headspace now to end the season. So it's been a roller coaster though, and I'm looking forward to going back home.
Yeah, you do have that base of Illinois, but I'm curious, you know, you're in this ranking period right now where, I mean, the rankings are completely messed up, but, you know, nearly impossible to either go outside of Qualities of All Z or into main draw. So, I mean, you definitely are one of the harder working players out here right now, but what's motivating you towards the end of this year after a very long year of travel to be out here playing these tournaments?
Yeah, I think in my own head, I had a pretty disappointing year before the US. And as soon as I got COVID, I kind of just sat down and it was just like, I want to finish strong and just prove to myself that I can do what I think I can, basically. And that was it. That was it, really. I was just like, I wasn't happy with how I had the year going into the start of the year. And I was basically just like, I want to finish strong. And that's been driving me. And I'd love, these three are strong, but I'd love to get my first title in one of these three. So we'll see how it goes.
In terms of just that kind of how you're basing your year, do you think not really having that flexibility of going home, having training, a good training block at home, do you think that has hurt you in terms of just how you're able to focus mentally and really kind of set the year?
Yeah, especially in the middle of the year, you know, I think a good schedule is so important to keep mentally fresh and physically ready, and you haven't been able to do that. So it's been more of just a mental battle the whole year. But now that Australia's opened up, Sydney and Melbourne opened up, it's already just like talking to people from back home. It's already like, geez, next year we can actually go back home, and it's actually going to be nice to be able to do that. But yeah, for sure, this year has been harder without that training block, for sure.
What's it been like for your family and your close friends back there? I know I have friends in Melbourne, and I know it's been a little bit more drastic in Melbourne, but your friends and family in Sydney, what's it been like for them?
So for my parents, they actually love it. They they have a nice coffee machine at home, and they work in IT anyway, so okay. They don't need to go in. They got each other. They're pretty happy. You know, the weather's good. For my friends, it's been a bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
One of my mates, he's a doctor, so he's still been able to go into work, but for the others, you know, they're in a 4-month lockdown just right now. And they called it Freedom Day when they opened up just recently. And it's, I can't even imagine. And as weird as it sounds, it's like so many Aussies left Australia because they were like, I can't do anything right now here. So they all went, and now you see a lot of them actually grinding the futures as well.
No, I want to take this back a little bit, Vukic. And I think I looked up your career-high ITF ranking, which it seemed like you didn't play a lot of ITFs.
I think that's correct, yeah.
Only reason why you were not top 600 in the world. But yeah. I want to hear, I mean, you know, right now you're top 200 in the world ATP. You were in top 500 or 600 ITF coming into Champaign. First, what was the thought to initially get you to play at a university? And then talk about your development into becoming a professional tennis player, because you're not the same old road of, you know, being top 10 in the world, you know, taking on, you know, the pros at 18, whatever that looks like. So, you know, tell me about kind of that journey for you.
Yeah, it was so different. I was a horrendous junior. Like, I was very, very average. And I made the decision to go to Spain right after I graduated from high school when I was 17. And then I didn't like it because I actually, as weird as it sounds, I kind of enjoyed school. So going into like full-time tennis was too much for me early on. And I was there, I was in Spain. I was like, if I do this for another 6 months, a year, I think I'm going to quit, to be honest. Like, I think I'm just going to burn out, like, straight away. So I was, like, you know, fighting my parents a little because they wanted me to go pro, but I was just like, I need to go to college. Like, I need, like, a bit of a normal life, to be honest. And then I went to college, and, yeah, I just loved the environment. I think that first year I improved so much. I had a really good team and just loved everything about it, and was just kind of really motivated. I think it was the motivation to kind of prove people wrong that said college was a bad move as well. So I think that was a little bit of, it was in the back of my mind. And then, from there, just kind of each year, you know, you get a bit more confidence, a bit more belief, and then it just kind of gradually keeps going. And then, yeah.
I mean, you're being a little bit humble because obviously I have the connection. I am wearing my Illinois tennis shirt right now, but you were kind of in terms of what I saw from a little bit of an outsider's perspective. But in Champaign, I mean, everybody was looking at Aaron Hiltzik. He was the number one recruit in the country.
Yep.
And you were kind of this. Oh, look, we got a bonus guy. And so it's a little bit different than that. I mean, you were kind of just like, okay, we're going to put him over there. And then all of a sudden, like, you're hitting the hell out of this forehand and everybody's just like, wait a minute, that guy down there actually can hit, but that's one thing. Right. But then to get to that point where I think it was like, what, a year later you beat Stachowski in Sydney, and that's a big step. So what accounted for that?
A bit of craziness, a bit of just, I was, I don't know what was in me, to be honest. Like, I was so motivated in that first year. It was a nightmare for Brad, the head coach, for me, because I was slamming rackets, breaking tarps, every practice, yeah. I'd lose a point and then I'd be insane. I was so on myself, And I think I thought that I could get to this level, even though maybe the coaches initially didn't and were just like, yeah, right, he's a bonus guy. And I actually found out later in my career that there wasn't, when we had a first dual match, I think we were playing Baylor, who were number two in the country, and I played five then and I ended up clinching a 3-all. This was the first dual match away. And I remember I found out after I graduated that the coaches were split on whether to even play me or not.
Really?
Yeah, so they still weren't 100%. Wow. And who knows, if they didn't play me that first match, who knows where my career would have gone,
right,
you know? So
right.
It's like, it's one of those things where, it's, you know, it's a bit of luck and a bit of all that. But yeah, I think it was definitely a bit on me, a bit of just, I was just so hard on myself, I think, that first year. And I've learned to relax. Otherwise, you just, you can't survive,
bit.
Mate. You can't survive, yeah. Yeah.
You know, you can build on stuff. You can have this kind of fake it till you make it confidence. But when was that kind of first time where you're like, wait, I could kind of be a professional tennis player and actually make a push for, you know, top 100 in the world?
For top 100, I think it's just a bit gradual. I think it's just, you know, you get different goals along the way. I think after my freshman year, I think I made a few futures finals. I think I beat Garone in like the semis. I think I made two finals there, and then like you said, I played Stachowski. Yeah.
I mean, everybody has a story of Giron in the finals, man. Of the future.
Yeah, he's everywhere. He's played every future, mate.
Every future.
Yeah. And then I think Stachowski was when I got that win on like a bigger stage, I was kind of like, oh, like, I like this is cool. And I think it's just the great, like, every year I feel like I get a win or like a tournament where it's just like, okay, I can do it, and it just adds that more belief. So I think it's been more gradual than anything.
Yeah, that.
And coming into
coming
into this next year right now, obviously the schedule, you know, everybody, it's all completely up in the air right now, especially in the Challenger Tour, which is, you know, is the norm that we deal with. But, you know, what are those goals looking like? You know, obviously you wanted to finish the year out strong, but are there any consistency goals or any goals you're looking towards, you know, during hopefully somewhat of a normal year for us?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be top 100. I think I'll reevaluate everything after this year after these three tournaments are done. But it's got to be that. But, you know, I've been working with also new coach Jay Gooding, and you know, his mentality I think is something that's really helped. You know, he's very, of course, goal oriented, but it's more the day to day and just trying to be the best today and just not even focusing on tomorrow or the day after, but just literally today giving it your best and just showing your identity today, and then try to do it tomorrow, and then that's it, and then let's do it again tomorrow, and that's it, literally just one day at a time. Because if you think of it too much, it's too overwhelming, it's too much, and you start thinking, oh, can I get top 100 like this? And at the end of the day, I think you just got to be like, oh, screw it, like, I'll just do it tomorrow, and we'll see what happens.
Jay is an interesting choice. I know he's been working a lot more on the women's tour over the last several years, has opened an academy down in Orlando. And what I had been told was that he is kind of providing a base for Australians when they come through the States is what I'd heard. So how is that working in terms of an actual relationship to potentially go out on the road more with you? How are you kind of structuring that?
Yeah, listen, it's something that's just starting, but you know, I did first meet him at the French Open this year when he was contracted by Tennis Australia. And you know, he helped me there. I won a few rounds over there, and then me and Alex Bolt, we just kind of were like, should we split him, get him on the road? And then we got him for Columbus, he had him for San Diego, and then Indian Wells. And then I think we both really liked him, just the way he kind of approached things. You know, at the end of the day, tennis is tennis. It doesn't matter if it's women's tennis or men's sure. tennis, you know, and it's the same approach you're getting to top 100 and then beyond. And I think we've both realized the quality he has, and it's just, I think having someone there as well is for the most part a huge thing consistently for the mind, for sure.
You guys were down there in Orlando when COVID, you guys yeah. all three contracted COVID. Can you walk us through those few days, that week of what oh, the mate. Hell happened?
Mate, so first of all, it's bloody hot in Orlando. It's like, I don't even know what it is in Fahrenheit, like probably close to 100 or like 90 degrees
plus
Fahrenheit.
The humidity.
Humidity, yeah. I can't deal with it.
It's a swamp.
Oh, man. And we're there, and there's never a cool breeze as well. So it's just like warm air, which is warm air. And we're there. Kubler gets it first. So he gets it first. And then as soon as someone gets it, everyone's in like high alert. You know, everyone's just like, you get like a little nose, like you start thinking that you have symptoms. And then I think it was 2 days later, me and Bolte are practicing. And at the end of the practice, I'm like, ugh, like I'm not feeling great, you know, like this is like, but I think I have like heat exhaustion, you know, because like the sun's getting me, you know, like I'm like, God, I feel tired. Take a test, homemade test, get negative. You know, I'm just like, all right, we're still battling. We're still going. Bolte tests positive the next day. And I'm like, oh, come on, man. Like, US Open's in 5 days. US Open's in 5 days. And I'm like, please. Like, I'm talking to, like, the Tennis Australia doctor. And she's like, Alex, like, I think you have it. And I'm like, nah, we've got to be positive. We've got to be positive here. Not COVID positive,
you
but like, yeah.
Have it.
Yeah. And then, you know, Tuesday, I still test negative. And I'm like, have I swerved this? I still feel like crap, though. Like, I feel like I've got heat exhaustion. Like, I feel really bad. Wednesday, finally get tested and get tested positive. I was like, all right, that's me. That's me done. But it, after that, it was kind of annoying because obviously, you know, you want to play US Open. It's a big financial incentive and a big, huge tournament just to prove yourself. And it was nice to be back on the hard courts, I'm not going to lie. But then after that, it was like, all right, it is what it is. Let's move on and finish the year strong.
So in terms of you going home, and I know it's still to be determined what's exactly happening in terms of the players, you just got it. I assume, are you going to be or getting vaccinated before heading home? How are you handling that so you can kind of have that easier transition to get back there?
So I got my second dose. So I got my first dose and then I got COVID.
Okay.
So it was a bit of an awkward situation. But then after that, I got my second dose, I think a few weeks after.
Okay.
I got COVID. And it was, yeah, I still felt it like the day.
Yeah.
You feel like you're yes. just getting sick.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you never actually get sick.
Right.
But it's like, but I think I actually talked to Wally Masur last night. And he basically, I think they're all optimistic down there in Australia that they will host everything and have a decent calendar. They just need the government's approval, really. But they're actually all quite optimistic.
It's I can't imagine the amount of hurdles that they're having to jump yeah. right now to make sure everything is in place, especially like, are there going to be challengers ahead of time? I mean, that's the real question for me. Are there going to be opportunities for qualifying players to play one or two tournaments before qualies?
I think they will. I think they will try to put, but there's always that one that they put on and it's always so strong. It's like yes. the cutoff's like 180, you know, right. It's just like, Jesus, like, yeah.
It's nice to see you guys laughing about it. Carrie, you guys were making a few jokes, which, It's still, I feel like in my head, a little too soon to make a joke about taking down three Aussies at one time. It is a little too much cash to be taken down at one time.
But, you got to laugh, mate. Otherwise, otherwise you just go into a deep spiral.
I had the same situation, Atlanta. I thought it was heat stroke, same field, you know, got off the court, tested negative day before, 2 days later, positive. But yeah, no, it's tough. Yeah, I mean, I actually had a question that I've wanted to ask somebody outside of the U.S. that, you know, is more Americanized, plays these indoor challengers. You know that, you know, guys are fighting kind of for a main draw Aussie spot. You know, it's something that is on everybody's mind. I didn't really know it when I was fighting for it, but that's kind of when Mike and I became friends for the first time. Is that in your head? I know, obviously, you're kind of as well fighting for a main draw spot in one way or another, trying to make a mark. What are those thoughts ever like, hey, this guy's a lot of pressure on him, he wants to make it, or you're just kind of playing?
A little bit, yeah. Like, I actually thought about it yesterday because I heard that they put Vegas into the mix, which I don't know, because it's usually just the three, right?
It's just the three, yeah.
Yeah, so they put Vegas into the mix, and I was just talking to Jay yeah, it is. Like, I think the Americans will handle it differently. Some people will actually relish it and love it, but some might get nervous. So I think if you do play an American, it is kind of like, let's see. Like it's kind of like, all right, like I'm not going to give you the match because I know what you're thinking as well, you know? So it's like, and I mean, for me, yeah, there's always the main draw, Aussie, on the line. I think, you know, I think Murray, there's a good chance he will get one. So that narrows it down, but you know, I'm just going to try to do my best and see what happens.
All right. So this is going to air Monday.
Okay. Yeah.
After everything that's happening today, as we're recording this, you have Jack Sock in your sights here. Let's go through the game plan. Because I talked to a player last night and I said, okay, how do you beat Jack Sock right now? Walk us through your game plan. Because again, you have my word upon my word on my daughter's life. This will not get to anybody until after the match.
Yeah, well, I still, I talked to Jay last night a little bit, and I'll probably talk to him way more about the actual game plan today. But, you know, it's a bit, the book's out on him a little bit, like how he plays. You know, he's got a big serve, big forehand, wants to hit his forehand, you know, moving left. And that's basically it. I'm going to try to give him that ball as little as possible. It's easier said than done. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think we are a little similar in that aspect. So I think it'll be a little bit of a battle like that. I think we're very differently mentally. So
agreed.
I'm gonna try to use that. And we're gonna see what happens. He's obviously, I think he will like these courts, but I think so do I. And I think it'll be an interesting battle because I think we kind of play similarly in some aspects. So I think because we know each other's weaknesses and how to expose that. So I think it'll be who can expose that best. And I'm actually looking forward to it.
If you need any practice, Mike is big on serve first ball recently. That's kind of what he's coming into in his own game style. He can only do it for 3.5 minutes. So just get all your practice in and then he's going to be on the floor then.
Perfect.
But you should be good. Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Thanks. Appreciate that.
You're welcome, Mike.
I do want to, your, let's talk just briefly, your backhand, when you came out, first year out of college, you were having to go pretty extreme to run around and hit that forehand from the doubles alley.
Yeah.
When you have a situation like that and everybody kind of knows that weakness and knows you're exploitable in that regard, how do you shore it up without taking away time from focusing on your strength, that massive forehand?
Well, I think that's what I struggled with at the beginning because it was getting exposed a lot, especially on different surfaces, on slower surfaces. I thought I was getting so exposed to my backhand. But it was, I think, Des Tyson, he works for Tennis Australia, he helped me a lot with the backhand and just how to use it. I think it was more that sometimes I was trying to do too much with it, where it's like I have a very flat backhand and it actually is quite annoying for some players to deal with. Even if I don't do too much, it's kind of like, I think someone told me it's good enough. You know, people have gotten by with a lot worse and just being like, it's fine. Just keep making, like, there's just like, you're trying to do too much with the ball. They're just like, just hit the ball cross court low. Like, what are they going to do really? Yeah. You know? And it's kind of like, keep making them do that and just not overthinking it basically. Cause I think sometimes I'd be like, oh God, I'm missing this. And then try to do too much with my back end where it's just like, why are you trying to do too much with your weaker shot? So it's more just like managing that.
So it feels like it's gotten to that point where it is solid.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And that's fine.
Yeah. Now it's getting to the next step where it's like, all right, if it's a bit shorter, can I do something, maybe use my slice a little more and improve that part of my game. So it's a nonstop battle for that. Yeah.
As we wrap up here, there are going to be other players who are going to be listening this, coming to Champaign in a week from when this releases. What are your top three tips in Champaign-Urbana? Top three tips for people visiting Champaign-Urbana, maybe for the first time.
In terms of what?
Just food, things to do. What's your thing?
Food. I think food. You got to go for Maize. Maize Mexican. You got to do that. In terms of what to do, it's going to be. I'm assuming it's going to be so cold.
Yes.
Listen.
There's never any sun.
There's never any sun.
Gray. It's just so gray.
If you like the snow, you're going to love it. Hopefully. Hopefully it snows over there.
The problem is nobody's ever packed for it. You're never packed for it. That's the problem. You go from Charlottesville. It's like kind of nice, maybe a couple bad days. Tennessee, sunny, cold, but like Urbana hits and you're like snow, sleet. It's raining sideways. Like, what is happening here?
That's so true.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I actually don't know what there'll be to do too much. To
be
honest,
it's gotta be a basketball game.
Oh yeah, basketball starting.
Yeah,
yeah, basketball starting. Football will be the end of it.
Yes, thank God.
Yeah, actually, we're gonna be good in basketball this year.
Yeah,
we're gonna be really
good. It's like a top 10 team.
Volleyball might still be on as well.
Correct.
Volleyball will still be on. That's always fun because that's always like in the middle of campus. So it's like, it's such a good time.
Sounds like you're going to be mentally stable for this, which is probably in the minority for Champaign Challenger. So that's good. I mean,
it's going to be a good time, man. It's going to be a good time.
That's not entirely true because Noah, when I asked him the other day about doing the podcast at some point during the stretch, he said, well, if we can do it this week or next week, because Champaign. I'm just
saying mentally stable gives you like a 50% chance of winning the tournament just to begin with. I go into some of those matches and I have four of the cars still in my, you know, rental. I have four of my sticks still in my rental car. Like, we're just going to get out of here soon, you know.
Red Lion. Is that Red Lion still open?
Yeah, it is, of course. That place is never closing down. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So if Noah does happen to join us in Champaign, we've got a bar for him, and that's the important part.
Yeah, you can call it a bar. Yeah.
Yeah. You can call it a bar. Okay. And you guys played in Dallas? Dallas?
Yeah.
Dallas?
2 years ago? Something like that? Yeah.
Dallas 2019?
Yeah.
Noah can't hear me.
Change his career. And I'm for the people listening, I can't hear everything that Mike's saying. We have a little bit of technical difficulty, but yeah, that I single-handedly brought Vukic's career to the next step. So, you know, no need to thank me there or anything. But yeah, that was Dallas 2019.
Oh, no, 2020.
2020.
It was 2020. No. Yeah, it was before. Yeah, it was right before. I remember that. Yeah. It was actually a year and a half ago then. Oh, yeah.
Dallas is before or after New York?
The week before.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Makes sense. Wow.
So basically,
that feels like only about 14 years ago.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
you helped him and he brought you down. I mean, that's.
Actually, no. I actually played well right before. After that, played well. And then, yeah, it took a hiatus for like a year and a half.
I mean, it was a decent quality match. Like, it was like.
It was. I thought it was pretty solid.
Yeah. It helps us both. It helps us both. It helps us both.
Just another fuck you to Mike. And
well, you can't hear
Mr.
me.
Vukic, thank you so much.
He can't
for
hear
being
me
on.
Right now. So I, oh, what I can say he's is that he's still very short. Nobody likes him. And also has brought the quality of this podcast way down.
No comment.
Okay. You want to close now? I'll let you go.
Go ahead, Noah. Who's saying?
I'm done. No, I'm done here. I don't have a job here. It's all good. I don't need this.
Good luck today against Mr. Sock. Good luck the rest of the week. And most importantly, enjoy your time at home when you're able to get there, because I think that will be quite a reunion for you and your family and your friends. I can't imagine what that's like. So enjoy that. And thank you for joining us on the podcast.
For sure. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Throw on the old headset. I think you've done this before, once or twice. Maybe. It's been a couple years, cuz.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
I was just realizing, as Stefan Kozlov is now officially joining us, champion here in Charlottesville. Can you hear okay?
I can hear you great.
Okay.
A little nervous, though.
You really should be, obviously, because it's not like we've ever talked before.
I know.
This is the first one I've actually watched you win.
Yes. Your every other time titles, I win, you're not here.
Correct.
I remember that precisely.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I win the like ATP Challengers. Oh, I've only won three or four, but yeah, they happen to be all in
Columbus
the States.
And Vegas and Columbus.
Yeah, they all had to be in the exactly. Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
So I think now we're good.
Yeah,
I was a little nervous about that.
It's broken. Yeah, the curse is gone.
Today, let's talk about today first, because I know you want to get to the Dolphins. I know that's very important for
that's
you.
Okay,
I'm sure you have.
Now
a
that
jersey.
They're up, we can talk a little
okay
bit longer.
Okay,
but only 20 seconds longer.
Today, it felt like you were firmly in control from the get-go in terms of just taking Alex Vukic, who's had a great week, out of his patterns. Talk about the game plan to make sure he was not in a spot where he's finding multiple forehands in a row in that ad corner.
Look, it's very simple. I try to play. I try to make these guys play it. What, you know, what does Alex Vukic want to come out and do today? He wants to rip inside in, inside out for, and have long points. So I kind of have a general idea of how Alex wants to play. And for me, it's kind of a combination of, look, playing my game and also making them uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Because I'm not one of those guys that comes out from first point to last point and I'm just playing my game, right?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of trying to figure out whether it's, you know, Alex not getting forehands and JJ with the depth. You know, everyone's got these, you know, things that you have to be aware of. Otherwise, you're going to make them look like they're top 20 players.
But you recognize and are very cognizant of the fact that most people don't do that and have the skill set that you have to be able to do that. You have lots of different, you have variety, lot of variety.
Sure.
So when you approach a match, how do you break that down so you say, this game plan is going to work today, and I'm going to use this more so than I used something yesterday?
You know, it's interesting when you go out there and you're playing. Obviously, you know, for me, it's a big deal. You know, playing in these tournaments, playing in the later rounds, it's nerve wracking, and you start to forget about simple things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy. Like you and I could talk about up here, and I could tell you a million things, but when I'm out there, sometimes like yesterday, I didn't make adjustments in the second set. I mean, I kept getting the ball shorter and shorter until the guy's on top of the net. So it's one thing, you know, talking about it, and then it's another thing while you're out there trying to come up with those adjustments. So I just try to fall back to my big balls, to opening up the court, sneaking in, because I feel like that gives me the best chance. But like you said, it's a huge challenge when you're out there to figure out, have the awareness. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to take my time, think about what I'm going to do next. And today I realized very quickly that when I'm playing aggressive and I'm playing through the court and I'm sneaking in, he's very uncomfortable going, you know what I'm trying to say. So it's, that's kind of that.
You've been through a hell of a lot, man. And this last 3-month period has been remarkable tennis.
Yeah.
How have you done it so quickly, seemingly so quickly from the outside? Because I know it's been a long process.
Yeah. I think it's just been a long, long process. And like I said a couple of days ago in an interview, it's just a lot of losses, a lot of hard times, a lot of tough times. And I say that, you know, in retrospect, I know there's a lot of people out there with a lot bigger problems than I have, obviously. So, but for me, you know, I went through some tough losses. I went through some tough issues, life issues, and just happened to come out stronger and try to take the lesson in every defeat. So last couple months have been just great. I've got around some very knowledgeable people that have helped me figure out my strengths and weaknesses, and it's just been, you know, it's sports momentum. It's all momentum.
Yeah, but that's easy to say, but like, what is it? Because it's like it seems like it's been there, and there have been moments. Yeah. Has it been an idea of fitness? Has it really been all mental?
Mental is a huge part of it. Fitness, fitness is obviously at a high level for me. I have a long way to go with that. I feel like just to play in the, you know, high heat moments of, you know, Orlando or Australia. So that's going to be the next step for sure. And, you know, it started just being angry mentally, you know, just coming out here. And I feel like I'm a different person out there these days. I'm trying to rip your head off. You know, I'm really trying to establish myself. And I don't care anymore about, I don't really have any, you know, in the past I've had moments where I, you know, start to kind of let off the gas and stuff, and just, you know, like these guys are all good, and I just try to rip their head off, try to say, come on. It's more like a UFC fight in a way, kind of, and that's helped me, for whatever reason, be at my best. And it took me some time to figure that out.
How do you sustain that?
How do I sustain that? Okay. Alexander Zverev's 2 in the world.
Yeah.
Riley Opelka's top 10. I'm just a matter of time before I catch these guys. I just have too much inside of me to see that, and not to see that. That's obviously, this is going to come out wrong totally, but those guys have done a heck of a job getting where they are. But I grew up with them, like, you mm-hmm. know,
yeah.
And we all came up together, and then I just completely fell off the mountain, completely. And I'm still very, very far off from them. And but that's my goal. My goal is to get back there competing against those guys one day again. It would be pretty cool story.
So this is kind of a big picture question, because often in this sport, when you talk about those guys, we talk about weapons, right? And how you get to that next level.
Yep.
Your weapon is not something that's just easily you could point to,
yeah,
right? 100%. Because it's your variety and the way you can disrupt people. That's kind of a hard thing to describe, isn't it? But that's what allows you to be great again.
To be completely honest with you, when you say, like, people say, oh, you have so much variety, you have, like, that's foreign to me. I don't know what that is. It's just the way that I've been taught the game, and it's just so natural for me that, like, I don't even know what that even means. I understand that I can slice, I can hit any shot, I have variety and stuff, but like you said, weapons is going to be a huge thing. I think I'll figure it out. I think, you know, just, you know, some, you know, obviously serves needs to get better. Fitness needs to get better. Everything needs to get better. So
serve's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, serve's gotten better.
It's gotten a lot better. Yeah. I mean, where has that come from?
Just mindset again, just having that right mindset and just going after it. I had some help. I had Salzenstein help me a little bit with the serve, just to do some, you know, corrections. And he's obviously a genius brain. And then some other people as well, you know. So honestly, just practice and trying to get better, you know.
Seems like you've got a hell of a lot of people giving you some pretty damn good advice, Kaz.
I've been super lucky. I've always been super lucky to, you know, spend time around good people.
Yeah.
And
yet you still hang out with me. It's weird.
Hey, we hung out before the match today for about 20 minutes, like scrambling to warm up.
All right, Kaz, I have to ask you, obviously,
sure.
The Australian Open Wildcard Challenge.
Yeah.
I know you knew that match yesterday was a big one.
Yes.
Now you are firmly in the lead after the win today.
Yes.
How are you approaching it? Obviously, there's still one result for both you and JJ, and also
so it's
Max.
3 out of 4 tournaments?
It's 3 out of 4.
Max who?
Cressy.
What did he win?
Semifinal and final in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, my God. Wow.
So there's a third.
That.
Yeah, I didn't actually know it until 2 days
playing?
Ago. He was in the final of Ekenthal today.
Is that in Europe?
Yeah.
Wow, that guy's a beast.
He is.
He's such a good player.
How do you approach it? Because, listen, there's one more result that has to be tacked on over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
How are you going to do it, especially considering you have to play Vukic again?
Yeah, I was very, I was disappointed to see Vukic again first round. He's a tough player for sure, and not someone you want to play back-to-back matches. But regardless, I didn't know about the wild card thing until the Tennis Atlantic guy, like, bombarded me with questions about it.
Okay.
And I knew it obviously always at these tournaments we have that competition, but for whatever reason, I just kind of didn't think about it and forgot about it in a way. And naturally, that's the way I want to think about it. I want to forget about it. I want to just do my best every day because, you know, thinking about that stuff completely, you know, paralyzes most humans and, you know, it doesn't help, right? Like, obviously, playing JJ yesterday, I know that there's a little extra on the line. I try to have more energy. I try to execute more. But at the end of the day, it would be such a cool experience, obviously, to play in a main draw of a slam. I never have. But like I said, there's so much to go. I'm just focused on the next match, just playing the first point of the next match good. So that's my mindset.
That's a good thing is you don't have to worry about a new scout. I mean, you've got
what do you mean?
You don't have to worry about a new scout.
Oh, scouting report. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, let's do that again.
How many times does that happen, you think?
What's crazy is that
happens a lot, right?
The doubles final is going to be played in the first round, too.
No.
Yeah, Blumberg.
That's got to be Blumberg, first, right?
It's not happened in the 8 years I've been doing this. Blumberg,
sure.
Schnurr, Nielsen, Huey in the first round. Just
there's
like
definitely been... At what these challengers, there's definitely been a singles finals first round before, though.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, okay. But yeah, I've never seen it where it's in both.
Okay, yeah, that's wild.
Yeah,
it's wild.
The odds of that happening are crazy.
No, that's absurd. I mean, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so
sure.
It makes it easy for me, too. So I'm happy about that.
What did you think of the match today, Mike?
What did I think? Yeah. I don't think you ever let him get comfortable.
Yeah.
He never, I said maybe midway through the second, like there were maybe a handful of times where he had 3-4 hands in a row in that ad corner.
Yeah.
And he never, you kept making him work.
Yeah.
And even when you were going to deuce patterns, it was pulling him out wide.
Correct.
So he didn't have that ability just to,
correct.
Okay, I want to get back over there. It was just so disruptive.
Yeah.
It was a dominant performance in that regard. And you served very well again.
Served very well again. You know, I think that there were certain, like if you look back at that match, there were certain points of the match where if he executes, we have a different match completely.
Probably.
Like first set, 4-2, he had 3 break points.
Yes.
That's back on serve.
4.
Second set, 4. Okay, second set, he must have had at least, I mean, love 30 last game.
Yeah,
he had chances to, this match could have been 4-4 the other way if he executes.
Yeah, he's going to, for him, I think the returns, game, especially in that ad corner, is going to be a real big progression.
When he came out, I thought I think he was really trying to establish physicality and long points and getting money. But then I think he got away from it. I don't know what
that's because of you though.
But we play. Yeah, it's because of certain. Yeah, that's because I made him uncomfortable. Right. But I'm sure he still could have done it. I think maybe he realized that. Look, that's not going to maybe work today.
The thing is,
like with Kubler, like come on. Like with Kubler, we were having 30 ball rallies at one point.
Well, and they're very tight. I mean, so Alex was watching that match in particular and had it in his head that you had that kind of a performance against him with Kubler willing to grind that long.
Yeah, so totally. I think that's huge for me because, you know, guys always want to have a plan of attack for sure. So,
Kaz, I went through and looked at some pictures. me and you in Maui in 2015. Me and you in Sacramento the fall before. I mean, we both look like babies and been through hell over the last couple of years. So it's nice to be able to celebrate just for a couple minutes out here with you.
Thank you, man. You know, I've got much love for you and always want to put my best performance in front of you. I don't know if it's just because I was a young 14-year-old watching Mike see tennis on my iPhone. But, I always, appreciate playing in front of you. I know you always say very knowledgeable stuff about the game.
Every once in a while, I get some things wrong.
Exactly. So we appreciate everything you do, man.
All right. That's Stefan Kozlov, our champion here in Charlottesville. And, we'll talk to you guys tomorrow from Knoxville. Any last words for the folks on Twitch?
All right. Go Dolphins.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at Mike C. Tennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.